shoulders. Please be seated. Welcome to the honorable members of the relevant committees, but a special welcome to the ministerial task in dealing with the intervention in the five departments of the Limpopo, a team being led by the Honourable Minister for Finance with his colleagues in Cabinet. We know they are released now from Cabinet, a very important meeting. And we are also thankful to His Excellency the President to release the Honourable Ministers to appear before our committee, a meeting that's actually long overdue. What is actually interesting, Honourable Ministers, is that we started 2012 with this ministerial committee on the 9th of February, the day of the State of the Nation address the morning, and the President addressed the country the afternoon. This is the last meeting of this Lekom for Finance for 2012. We're ending with the ministerial task team as we started in the beginning, so it's, I think, quite applicable. All members, the Lekom for Finance is dealing with the intervention as referred to it, also in consultation with, in terms of Section 105 of the rules of the NCP, with those relevant committees, and we welcome Chairperson Pat Shabani, Honourable Shabani sitting there, chairing the Select Committee on Public Service, dealing with public works, roads and transport and public service issues. Honourable Magachi, the Chairperson for the Select Committee on Education, is on the line. She's also tied up in the meeting. Honourable Hashmani, the other Chairperson for Health, is in a Magistrates Commission dealing with issues until the 30th of November with other colleagues, so they are not here. We receive those apologies. When we started on the members with this intervention during the review as a committee, we said the objective is good governance and sound financial management in terms of the Public Finance Management Act. This is the rules of the game. This document. First phase was a diagnostic analysis be made by National Treasury and the different departments. Then were the action plans drawn up in terms of the diagnostic analysis. There was stabilizing of the financial situation in Limpopo, and we dealt, as we've read and the presentations we received when we were there a second time. We were there in March for the first time. We were there now a second time, beginning of October, in the recovery phase. The picture we got on the ministers is that the financial situation stabilized. But when you look at the operational side, there's a problem in certain departments, referring to specific service delivery. So with this background, Honourable Minister for Finance, I'm going to put you on to lead the presentation and then refer to your Honourable colleagues to take their specific parts. Welcome again. I'm handing it over to you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and to members of the committee, and in particular, thank you for accommodating us at this hour. I'm sure many of you are used to lunch times, many of us are not. So you can join us for the day in terms of our schedule. You're right, the President very kindly excused us from a cabinet meeting so that we could make ourselves available to you. I'm also grateful to my colleagues for being with me, Minister Deve on my left, the Minister of Justice, Mr. Transport on his left, Mr. Martin, the Minister of Public Works, on his left, Mr. Murphy, the Minister of Basic Education, on my right, Mr. Mateka, and I'm also the Acting Minister of Health. So I'm the Minister of Health, supported by the DG of Health, and on my right is very appropriately the Deputy Minister of Finance, Mr. Nene, that you're very familiar with. We have been trying for some time, Chairperson, as you know. I've been talking to you frequently or SMSing frequently to see how we could get our diaries to match in order that this collective of ministers could make themselves available to you to explain in the spec of themselves where we are in what is a fairly unique process, although not the only one, in our own history, a very short history. And regrettably that this couldn't happen earlier on. We have met recently once or twice. The officials have been meeting. The convenership of the DG of the Treasury, who's on the extreme right, Mr. Huzile. And I think you make a very important point, which is why did we get to Section 101B, which is the second slide in what we're going to present to you. We had put this very bluntly to you earlier in the year, on more than one occasion, I think, that the province in late last year was essentially bankrupt, that it did not have sufficient cash to finance its 2011-12 budget, that it was going to run out of cash, and in fact to the tune of about 2 billion runs by the end of March. And as you will see in a moment, it would not have been able to pay salaries or service providers. We also made you aware that there was an increasing practice in the province of service providers being paid up to 8 times in a month, and that obviously not only were funds running out, but you also had a series of, it would appear, malpractices that we actually had to look into. If we can go back to slide 3, the province, again to remind you, had an overdraft facility with staff, and they wanted to increase that facility. They had a facility with a private bank, and that bank contacted the Treasury and said, do we increase this facility? Will you guarantee this facility? And in addition, you see the last 2 points, the province had large unaccumulated or unauthorized expenditure and accruals. The numbers are on the screen, so I won't repeat them and bore you, which had to be rectified as well. You're correct to point out, this is one of the points that appears from your report, and it appears from your conversations in the Limpopo as well, that national government did not have a plan. Now, all we had are the symptoms. But what we also had were extensive coverage in the newspapers at the time of allegations of all sorts of malpractices. Interestingly, none of those allegations were contested, either with the ombudsman, or whatever that person is called now in the media, perhaps the media people can tell us, his press counsel, or in any legal form. More recently, the public protector has confirmed at least one of those instances of malpractices, and that is in the back of the on-point contact with the with the agency involved and the consent of the Limpopo provincial government. Minister Hadebe will brief you in a moment on where the various investigation processes are in the province as well. So all I want to say by way of introduction is that, as you correctly pointed out, we had in the first instance very clear indications that there were serious enough issues in the province, that the provincial finances were going to find themselves in dire straits. And when we talk about provincial finances, we're not just talking about the Treasury. We'll come back to that, and the Director General will take you through some of the details of that. We actually were talking about expenditure patterns in the province as a whole. And so while past departments have been involved in some of these practices, I'm sure if you go and look elsewhere in the province, you might well find similar instances as well. So we had to, as a matter of urgency, go to Cabinet and say, look, we seem to have a crisis here. What do we do? And finally, as you know, Cabinet decided that Section 101B needs to be implemented in the Limpopo province. The officials have done a good job in the first 3 months of this year across the board in preparing a diagnostic report. So we didn't just take the initial symptom, as you correctly pointed out yourself, Chairperson, there was a diagnostic report. And that diagnostic report gave us a deeper sense of where some of the challenges might have been. And they then began to, even while the diagnostic report was being done, act. So if you take the example of the Treasury, well before the diagnostic report was ready, but on the basis of what we already knew, we had to get the cash management right. We had to sit with officials in Limpopo and prepare a budget for the new financial year, and a budget that would ensure that some of that unauthorized expenditure is taken care of, a budget that would ensure that there's surplus in it to take care of those sorts of issues, and begin to look for personnel who would be able to do the job that needs to be done, a challenge that all colleagues have faced, because we've got our own entities to run at a national level. And I think what we need to understand is that it wasn't fair capacity around. We have to find capacity from existing people in our various departments to do the work that actually has to be done. Since then, there's been more detailed action plans. I believe they were made available to the committee in October when you had some of the officials present. And if you look back on the year, I think we've barely stabilized the situation. We've gone over the worst of the financial crisis. We, I think, have plugged some of the leaks in that province. Can we say that we've put everything right? I don't think so. And there's much to be done, as each of my colleagues will explain as we go forward. So if you were a chairperson, the way we would like to do this is the Director General of the Treasury will very quickly cover the finance issues, which you are very familiar with, and then the Minister of Basic Education needs to be in Parliament to address questions at 3, or shortly before that, and we will need to excuse her so she can follow immediately after.
DG, welcome at our meeting, also with the rest of the Treasury. I see you some of the administrators and any other officials from the relevant departments. Over to you.
Thank you very much, Chair. I want to, and I'll try and be brief. Excuse me. I want to go back to this issue of just the start in relation to the issue of the province not having cash. And it's a very important counterfactual or starting point in the sense that the province, and Mr. Brown would correct me when I'm forgetting the facts, had written to us twice before the intervention, asking us to advance it with cash. In other words, what happens is that we agree at the start of the financial year with each one of the 9 provinces that you have got X allocations comprising of the following: equitable share and conditional grants, list them, and then we say they will be paid to you according to the following payment schedule. Take time to look at this payment schedule, which takes into account national government's cash flow, because we receive taxes at different intervals depending on which tax we're talking about in a year, and also have to borrow, so that there is never a time when we have to transfer money to provinces or municipalities that we don't have the cash. So we don't always have a lot of cash in the bank. Sometimes the cash that we have in the National Revenue Fund, CPD, and all our accounts runs to very low levels, and it's for that reason that we've got this cash coordination arrangement. We do this thing of having a payment schedule to avoid a situation where at the time when some of these institutions have got to receive money, we don't have it. And to make sure that to the extent that some may have more cash than others at any given time than they really need, then we can move the cash around. So we then advance them first time, without asking too many questions, because it's something that happens in the ordinary way of filing a business. But we do get a little bit concerned because it does say maybe they didn't pay sufficient attention to the payment schedule at the time we agreed it, to make sure that there's a perfect synchronization between the inflows and the outflows. When the province then came the second time, which coincided with the time when the bank with which they had an overdraft also starting by asking questions, after asking questions, we then got very concerned. We got very concerned because we were not very far from the end of the financial year, which meant that the amount of cash that remained for them for the full financial year was becoming smaller. So that if the problem they had was not just a short-term cash flow problem, mismatch between the inflows and the outflows, if we just gave them and then they came next time, we gave them, then when we get to March and they say advance, would have had nothing to advance them with. Now, immediately our mind went back to the situation we had seen with some provinces, albeit with, on a varied scale, in 1997, I think it was, thereabout 96, 97, 98, when some provinces ran out of cash, at a time when national government was not did not have the means to give them immediately, and people only got aware that there was a problem when social security grants were not paid. Right? And we also, by the way, understood the pain that that caused to the people who were supposed to receive the social security grants, who were done work for government and stuff like that. So, understanding all of that, we said, no, we need to understand this situation in a little bit more detail, and we started asking questions, but we didn't get terribly satisfactory answers. Now, this was particularly problematic because over a period of time, we had been looking at the accumulated unauthorized expenditure and stuff like that. I put that context because often then, some people in communicating about this, they never pause to ask the question, what could have happened if when the province asked to be advanced, national government didn't have the money to advance them? Because salaries, it could have meant that salaries were not going to be paid. It could have meant that social security grants were not going to be paid at that point in time. So a lot of people sometimes, and I'm not necessarily referring to people in this room, but one watches the communication simply because national government stepped in, national government then advanced the cash, and life went on. It's very easy to debate without reflecting on what is it that was avoided. Having said that then, and the minister has highlighted a number of these things, once we were there, we then interacted with Treasury, the rest of the departments where the intervention was, and said, look, the situation that you have suggests to us that you have made payments sometimes without paying sufficient regard to whether you have the cash in the first instance. But in the second instance, without paying due regard to whether you have the budget, when you accumulate unauthorized expenditure, it means that you spend more than the money that you are authorized by the legislature or parliament to spend. So when you have accumulated it, and if you spend a lot at one point, you have to spend less than what you receive at another point so that you deal with that expense, number one. Number two, if you don't have cash, you can use overdraft sometimes, but only for bridging purposes, not forever. Because when you get to the end of the financial year, you run out of, if your creditors or your bank allows you to take out of money. So we had to pay particular attention to cash flow, because the provinces for the cash flow position. Now the situation was turned around. The deficit improved, as the bullet indicates, and the situation was turned to a surplus. And this situation, of course, had to be done with all departments. Now, in the detail, some of this entails making sure that all payments that were made had to be backed by all the necessary documentation. There had to be verification. There must be a contract. The contract must have been duly entered into, appropriately awarded, must have been competitive. There must be evidence of services or goods delivered. There must be indication that they were of satisfactory quality in line with the contract and all of those things. Once those things were instituted, including them from a cash management point of view, giving each department a cash allocation per month, to say this is the cash you have, you will spend only that cash When you have exhausted it, let's talk again, or close to exhausting it so that you don't run out of cash and get into trouble. We have to also deal with the accruals. These have declined to less than half, far less than half actually, 250 million against the 1.2 billion that was there. In the beginning of the intervention, there was some accumulation of unpaid invoices, but that has been dealt with significantly. Yesterday, when we did the presentation to the PCC, Limpopo didn't stand out as the province with the biggest number of unpaid invoices. In fact, when you look at the amount outstanding, it's a little bit small relative to some of the provinces where there is no intervention. Whereas they were the worst at the time, so the situation improved. Now, very important to understand that the cash thing had to be first, but at the same time, we never lost sight that there was service delivery. It was precisely because of that point that they had to be payment service providers, make sure that they can continue to keep their businesses alive and continue to supply services to government. To the extent that they had valid contracts, they had complied with them in the past, and there were no questions or blemishes about the work they had done or how they had ended those contracts. Now, in part of dealing with the unauthorized expenditure entails them having to get the finance bill and legislature to approve some of this, and this will be dealt with, and of course there is a bill that has been tabled now which begins to deal with that. Now it's very important to understand that without having instituted the measures that instituted, which were stringent, there wouldn't have been the cash to deal with this unauthorized expenditure, so that we gravitate towards starting on a clean slate and stuff like that. An adjusted budget of 1.6 billion will address a range of pressures in areas such as education and stuff like that. We have been seized with making sure that not only do we provide departments such as education and health with the resources to deal with the past, but also deal with future things. I'll pick two examples here, respectively. In education, the issue of making sure that learner support material and there are resources for it, and processes to procure logistically and otherwise are also underway. But in health, we learned with shock that in a number of hospitals, I think about 38 of them, but the Digital Health can correct me on this, didn't have boilers, stuff like that. So we've worked with them to make sure that there are resources, to make sure that these things are working. Now, as far as I know, and I'm not an expert on this, I don't think that 38 boilers are supposed to be replaced like every year or every month. The fact that about 38 of them actually there have to be replaced is a reflection, by the way, that over a period of time, maintenance of the things probably didn't work very well, the sequencing of the replacement and stuff like that. Now, all of these things are things that sort of the money doesn't show, the bank account doesn't tell you in the beginning, but as you get into the system and you learn, you then realize what is going wrong. Now, the adjustment by the 2012, which have been approved by the portfolio committee, address the things that are listed here. Improvements in conditions of service in the three social services departments, and I've touched on the provision for learner support, accommodation for doctors, I've helped with the boilers, but making sure that in public works, where after management capacity is very important, it is actually attended to, and of course, a range of priorities relating to just making sure that the recovery plan is implemented and the province is stabilized almost to a point of permanent stability. Now, there is still a lot more work to be done. I mean, the slide just underlines some of those things, and this will take quite a bit of time. They will vary in terms of how long they will take. I want to just give an example here, because in the Treasury we've been trying, and I know that in other departments too, but Treasury have been close to because we are directly involved there, to work with the province to appoint an HOD. The process has not been easy. To date, we have not had a permanent HOD there, because once you start having that permanent HOD, then you can cascade and say, what are the areas that got weakness, cash flow, budget management, or resource management, whatever the case, in terms of their structure, the name given to it, and then you can build over a period of time to have an institution that even post the intervention then can continue to do the right kind of things and make sure that there is no reversion to the situation that necessitated the intervention in the first place. and this is the stuff that I've referred to here already. I don't want to take the rest of the time of the meeting. I think I should just pause here perhaps because the other minister will cover the other bit, and then I can come in if necessary later.
Thank you very much.
I think it's very important to mention that at the time we were in Limpopo, Honourable Minister, there was an understanding of a conditional grant of fund 1.5 billion rand. Actually, money given by Treasury to this province. And that's one of the issues we addressed with the administration. So just put that into picture as well.
Thank you very much, Chair. I will just quickly add on from where colleagues have left that when we, I think again, would have known that when we as TBE came into the province, the department was overspending about more than 1.4 billion just on salaries because of these access teachers. And as a result, they had to freeze almost everything. They had to freeze transfers to schools. When you got there, we found that schools had not been given the money due to them. It's money that are supposed to go to schools for navy schools. So schools can't charge fees on the other end. We're not able to give schools money. So they're not being given the transfers. We couldn't employ, or the department was unable to employ teachers when they were required because of this excess where you have ground teachers at the wrong place. I think it was public knowledge that we could place orders of books. And indeed, there were problems, scholar transport, school nutrition, all sorts of areas. For 2012, we could only, which was supposed to have been ordered in 2011, could only procure books to be done out from treasury, but there was no money to do it. Even for 2013, the books that we had bought this year, again, there was just no money in the department because the excess staff still continues, and I'll get to say what progress we made in terms of excess staff. So even for this year, we didn't have money to get a bill out from treasury to do all the books that we have. Unfortunately, we've been able to do it because, as I say, last year when orders were supposed to be placed a year before. So orders had not been placed in 2011 or 2012. That's why there were major challenges. This year we have been given money by treasury to place the 2013 orders this year, and therefore that's why we will have books in 2013. So orders have been placed, all of them. We've been able to make major savings also working with the province. I can say, Chair, that from the money that we're given by treasury, on textbooks we were able to make savings of more than 200 million because of the way we work. On stationery we were able also to make savings of more than 100 million. So in total we've made savings up to the amount of 300 million, but still we've been able to give every child a book. And again, the treasure, as I said, I was not sure when they said the financial pressure is gone because we could only afford to give schools 6% of what was due to them. There were not enough money. Even next year, we won't be able to give them 100% from the public, unless treasury does something magical. We'll still have 60%, which is very unfortunate because they didn't get their money in 2011, so they're in deep debt for the year that they didn't get their money. So they're really giving on the rent and paying each time they get money, they have to pay off their debt. So the 60% of norms and standards, which is having to expect problems like Limpopo to be living on debt, just made us. So but this is money they use for consumables. For basic things like chalks in the classroom, photocopying papers, money they used by wood in some instances for school. This is critical money to get schools to run properly. And that's why you would have a situation, I think correctly, so as the chair says, that the quality of service has to be compromised, obviously, because of ongoing challenges that we still have not been able to break even. The infrastructure to come to a standstill. Procurement of furniture to a standstill. I visited a school chair where all matriculants, I think, our men's people sitting on bricks and girls kneeling, so girls won't sit quite on bricks, I guess, so they had to kneel. We have been able, it's quite true that we have been able to make lots of progress in terms of really improving. Because the biggest albatross in Zimbabwe was your food provision around here. That's the biggest, amongst other things, that's the biggest area. So I think the province has been able to report savings of 400 million, but we still have, our deficit is 1.4. So we've made through an agreement that we've reached with unions, or not employing our friends, or not promoting, or not doing anything. So with that freeze, we've been able to make 400 million. We still have a deficit of almost 789 million, which we still have to. These things are going to be normal. We're going to give schools 100%. We're going to be buying books without any bailout. We're going to be able to have the right teacher in the right place. And indeed, because we will be living on bailout, we're not able to do justice to that which we're supposed to be doing in terms of nonsense standards. I have now remembered Minister, that I said I want to see. But we also have to approach this. I had a meeting in the school recently to really deal with the question of your unspent conditional funds, because of conditions. And because there's no money, we are going to approach Treasury to help to relax some of the conditions of the funding, especially for Mpopo, because on infrastructure, as much as the money from the IG, it has conditions which are difficult. They're fine, but they're more urgent things. I mean, the primary problem that Mpopo, which is the print system, we need money for maintenance, we need money for clearing out some other challenges, which is not part of that conditional fund. So we're going to approach Treasury to request that they help us request some of the conditions, to have a special dispensation for the books that we can use the conditional funds to deal with the urgent needs in the group. Otherwise, we're going to understand that money again, because the things are still, I mean, we are faced by a threat, not even a threat, there's a court case of again, Section 27 is taking us to court for unsafe ambition systems of toilets that have not paid the tenants who have not been able to drain. And it's because since the conditional fund money we have is not meant for that, and there's no money to get within the provincial coffers. Again, I want to approach them to relax the conditions also on school furniture that we're allowed to do it in a way that is suitable. So there's still all those ongoing challenges. And so that takes much of the time. Indeed, I'm not sure, maybe Treasury reports something else. There's still financial pressures internally, maybe at the global level, no financial pressure. As I say, we still have an over expenditure of almost 800 million, which is squeezing everything out. The textbooks report is here because of the bailout. There are lots of things that we're not able to do, which affect the quality of teaching to get your food inspectors or so, to go to schools because there's just no money for it. And it does create lots of inefficiency with a paying salary for people who are not able, whom you can't give the tools of trade to able to do the work. So there's lots of inefficiency that also comes because of this financial presence. And indeed, it affects the outcomes. Like, it means the schools can be supported because you don't have money to get cars to go to schools. And I can raise things. You can't employ teachers because you don't have money. Therefore, you don't have the right teacher in the right place at the right time because, again, you still have this ongoing pressure where you've agreed that you can't afford to employ more people. But as you have those weekends, again, that's what we've been discussing to say. Again, we need, despite the agreement that we've reached, you know, that in critical subjects, despite the fact that we'll be financially sinking, still we'll have to employ, you can't say you won't have a medicine science teacher, despite the fact we have to be moving, so that we have the processes parallel. So indeed, the ongoing pressures do affect, and I think I agree with the do affect your outcomes. And what we've discussed with Treasurer that we have to fast track also, just unblocking some of the areas so that we don't compromise your outcomes. I can say, so that even when the results come, I can say, indeed, these financial pressures, especially if they have compromised the performance drastically, and I'm sure they're going to come out to say $600 that put us into trouble. I don't expect much. I actually didn't expect much better from other provinces compared to Limpopo because of these pressures. You see, teachers don't have talks. I'm not sure what we expect them to do. Thanks.
I just want to appeal to honorable ministers, if they could forward their presentations to us, because this meeting will be captured in a report as well, alongside the report that was ATC this morning, to form the whole picture, to complete the whole picture.
Thanks, Chair. I'll be very brief. After Cabinet took a decision to put five provincial departments in Limpopo on Section 101B. The anti-corruption task team was on the 22nd of December requested to make capacity available to ensure the fast tracking of investigations and prosecutions where corruption or criminal conduct is identified in this intervention.
and on the 24th of January 2012, the Special Investigative Unit was requested also to render assistance on matters concerning non-compliance with policies, directives, legislation, in particular in relation to supply chain management as well as disciplinary matters. And in early January, the DPCI, popularly known as the Hawks, and the SIU responded also by mobilizing task team to execute the mandate that was given. But it was only in mid-January that the Hawks prioritized the investigations that are currently taking place. As well as the SIU, in early February, it also began analyzing all existing or known information to motivate for a proclamation by the President. At the end of January, the National Treasurer, through the Accountant General, appointed forensic friends to commence with forensic investigations in the various departments that are under administration. And of course, on the 23rd of March, the President signed the proclamation empowering the SIU to officially commence with investigation. The first forensic report was handed to the Hawks on the 30th of May 2012. I'll just run quickly that in the various departments that are under administration, to start with the provincial treasury, the various matters ranging from officials trading within their own department with possible contraventions of the Poker Act, Section 17, there's one official who is under investigation. There are also matters around annual financial disclosures or non-disclosure or incorrect disclosure. In that department, there are about 13 officials. The possible contraventions, they range from fraud or misrepresentation to disciplinary referral under Chapter 3 of the PSA regulations. And then there's another category of officials conducting remunerative work outside the public service, about 35 of those officials. And there were also cases that were handed over to the DPSA, about 7 of them. So there is progress in the various ones. On health, on all those categories that I've indicated, official trading within all department, all financial disclosures, etc., etc., they're in excess of 120 of such officials that are under investigating. On procurement matters in health, there are also criminal aspects that have been referred to the anti-corruption task team that are busy reviewing those reports as well. On education, I think the minister has already indicated as well that there are various officials who have been trading with own department, financial, non-disclosure, and possible criminal contraventions of the Poker Act, as well as the various disciplinary infractions of the PSA. Public Works as well is the same story. I think about 110 various contraventions. It was then on roads and transport, there are about 60. And where there are possible criminal charges, those have been referred to the anti-corruption task team. Also, in the all in all, if you take treasury there, health, education, roads, public works, there's a total of about 33 who are implicated in conflict of interest, and files that have been handed over to the DPSA is about 22. Total number of cases of officials that are actually under investigation is 1,063. So that's in a nutshell the report, but the message that one wants to bring here is that these various forensic reports, the SIU, are being reconciled now so that it can be finally determined which are the cases that have to be dealt with disciplinary in terms of the Public Service Act and those that will move to the state of dockets being handed over to the National Prosecuting Authority. The last point that I want to bring to our attention, that if the Senate committee, before it finalizes its report, it should compare the consultant's report that was presented to the committee against the report of the Auditor General, because there are fundamentally contradictions there. So if the committee can study carefully what the Auditor General has said in each government department, you will come to the conclusion that the consultant report is devoid of any reality. Thanks.
Thank you, Minister. Chairperson, I would like to ask the official from the Department of Transport just to give an overview as to where we are at the latest report.
Thank you very much, Honourable Minister. Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Ministers and members, I will be very brief, but concentrating mainly on the work that we have done since the visit. The situation in roads and transport remains stable, continues to be very stable. We don't project any over expenditure. We, of course, are mindful of the fact that some of this money could be a result of some delays in the procurement processes. But we have also strengthened the internal controls. All the invoices that have passed through for the past 11 months have been verified by the team. We have also, like all the others, developed a recovery plan, and we are implementing that. The total cleanup is complete. That information has helped us to do the reorganization in terms of the organogram of the department. We also have made some turnarounds within RAL and GAL, but the challenges there relate mainly to the rising data for having to roll out services like infrastructure rollout through an agency, and that work will begin very soon in terms of determining that. We are at a stage where everything that we have indicated that we'll do, we have put in place, and we are identifying officials that we will pair with the intervention team just to ensure that all of these gains that we have made are sustained. The last issue is the issue around the part of the public protector. We have developed an implementation plan to the public protector, got acknowledgement. We have since met with the DPSA, the SIU, and the state attorney on the matters that are recommended in that report. We met actually yesterday, and where there were parallel processes, we have tried to ensure that there is collaboration among the investigators. We would want to see some of these things done extremely urgently, more especially on issues of discipline, where the report indicates that there are officials that need to be followed up, including very senior officials in the department. We, of course, Honorable Chairperson, sent to the committee a written text of all the issues that I've just mentioned. We actually did not receive a brief to therefore properly put into a presentation. But we will send this note to the Secretariat. Thank you very much, Honourable Chair.
Minister. Thanks. Chairperson, Honourable Members, we are on track in public works in Limpopo. After consultation with the Treasury, we even changed our administrator because we needed a focus. You'd appreciate that we were using our acting COO as an administrator who also had to pay part of his attention to our national department, but because of this particular program, we had to speak to the Treasury had an arrangement, we have a full-time person, and we've reinforced the personnel in relation to that person. But one of the major turnaround projects in the National Department of Public Works relates to the asset management, in particular the issue of the asset register. And we are intensely engaged with that particular process. But we've come to realize, Chairperson, that unless there's cooperation and synergy between the provinces, national and even local municipalities on the asset register, there's nothing which we're going to do. We've just appointed people full-time from this particular sector of asset management, and one of those persons, amongst others, deals with the question of the asset register of Limpopo. So we just don't check. But very interesting on this particular question, whilst the properties would be at the different levels, and it doesn't happen only with Limpopo, it happens with almost all the properties. There are properties, and many of them, which are just in the limbo, neither in the national, provincial, nor the municipality, what you call register. So in Limpopo there, specifically, we're dealing with that particular matter. And one of the areas which I thought I need to clarify, it appeared in the report as paragraph 8.20, which talks about some friction between the MEC, the head of the department, and the administrator. On the 3rd of October, I had a meeting with everybody affected. I gave clarity, marching orders on how things have to be done. Rules were very clarified again. We even agreed with the MEC on the frequency of the meeting between us. And I want to emphasize, between us, as the MEC in the process, but I remain the executive authority. And at once the members, when they deal with this issue, they look into that. What is beyond the frictions? Not to say they are frictions. And I'm emphasizing, according to this arrangement, I remain the executive authority. And that is the issue of the friction. But what members should also realize, taking over from anybody, including powers and control, it's never going to be nice. But there are nice stories to put it that this thing is not working and so on. But it's important that members dig deep what is behind that. Thank you.
Thank you, honorable members, honorable chair and minister. Briefly on the report, we just went through it quickly. I just want to make a few remarks. The first, with regard to x-rays, just to say that the problem with x-rays is not the problem of Lebogang only. We did an analysis throughout the province. In 2011, the Limpopo province purchased a lot of x-rays. In South Africa, we are subject to radiation control laws. And the purpose of radiation control regulations is to ensure that radioactive materials, whether they be for x-rays or any other radioactive materials, are regulated to protect the public. But the radioactive materials that are in x-ray materials have to be at certain levels. That is the first thing. But secondly, it is not only the safety of the equipment that we look for, it is also the performance of the actual x-ray machines, meaning the images must be of quality. Otherwise, we get no diagnosis. So in 2011, 88 x-ray machines had to be certified. 27 of these have been sold because they can't be used. They have to be subject to radiation control. And 9 of these are not in working order. So we have a full report for you per hospital and the status of each x-ray machine. So I'd like the honorable members to understand that it is not the work, it is a global provincial problem of the x-ray machines. That is the first group of equipment. The second group, because of poor contract management. As part of the administration, we wanted to establish what the problem was with equipment in Libobo. The contract that was in existence for maintenance was such that the contractor took equipment from hospitals, kept it in a warehouse, 600 pieces of equipment, with no record. They've not recorded from which hospital the equipment is. They've not recorded what the problem is. They wait for individual hospitals to place requests to say fix the equipment. And we had problems and difficulties in understanding why CEOs of hospitals could just allow people to just take equipment and store them in a warehouse and wait for them to be repaired whenever and in whatever manner without a proper process of documentation. So what we've done, we've gone back to look at the legal contract so that we can have this equipment and include it back in the asset register. If you look at the Limpopo audit outcome, one of the problems is an asset register. Now, if you have an asset register that does not tell you where the equipment is, we'll actually identify during this process that some of the equipment was actually kept in this warehouse. So maybe there was no system of control and so on. Now, the fundamental problem with the manner in which equipment contracts, maintenance contracts are managed, are such that you buy equipment and then you issue a contract to somebody else, like Precious Metals or Tulix. Whether I got competence or not, it doesn't matter. I think this has been the problem. So my point of saying is that in future, there must be contract management and also maintenance and service of equipment that is purchased, not only for Limpopo but for other provinces as well. The third tier is about X-ray machines, which I have referred to. CEO, say you made reference to CEO. Limpopo is one of the provinces where the majority of the CEOs that were appointed were teachers. We advertised the posts, and 38 CEO posts have been filled. Chair, in January, all these CEOs will be subjected to training. 28 had to be replaced, and Limpopo is one province where the majority of CEOs were teachers. The CFO of the province was fired and somebody has been appointed in his place, has been replaced. With regard to performance bonuses, because of the budget pressures, this was held back, but now the payments will be made in light of the adjustment budget that was approved yesterday. Lastly, with regard to pharmaceutical depots, I just wanted to say that there are three problems that we wanted to highlight and also articulate some of the problems that we've seen not only in Limpopo and maybe one or two other provinces. The first here is with regard to the number of expired medicines that were identified in the depot. Two, pilferage that was happening in the depots. Three, the lack of medicine care facilities, meaning the medicines get stored in the depot. We procure them for them to be kept in the depot. So the medicine that we are currently testing in Limpopo was to find the mechanism by which we reduce the activity level in the depot and encourage companies and suppliers to deliver directly, especially to hospitals. We have stabilized the situation in the depot. We do not have 100% availability as yet in the depot, not even in the facility. It is now sitting at about 76%. But our view, Chair, is that at a depot you must retain a buffer stock. A depot must not keep supplies, but it must be buffer stock, but to have direct delivery to hospital and facilities and replace supplies as frequently as possible. Chair, those are the comments I wanted to make.
I just want to advise that in your reply that will be forwarded to the committee, also expand on the financial management issues as well, to give a holistic picture of health. Honourable members, there's a sitting at 3 o'clock and these honourable ministers must be in the house. So we must look at our time management, please. Welcome to Honourable Barotten and Ranto. From other meeting coming here, they were also in Limpopo. So welcome. We're not only a men's choir, we've got ladies amongst us as well. All the members, thank you presentations. We must start to practice. As I indicated that the departments forward the presentation to us, given by the Honourable Ministers. One thing that came out, Honourable Ministers, is the articulation of the recovery plan. This came out quickly during the whole week. And I think that is a matter to be addressed and that we think can be improved between the administrator and the administration. The other one comes from the province in terms of attitude. It doesn't help to point things left, right and center, you'll get nowhere. It's to sit around the table and to discuss the issues, and that message we gave to the Premier. Because in his introduction that Monday afternoon, it was a bit uncomfortable. Telling administrators to pack their cases and leave. That's not the idea. The role of this committee is to assist, to give direction, to come up with solutions. That's the role of the committee in the end of peace. And that's how we see our role. Honourable members, it's time for questions. Please be short and to the point. We have to release the ministers at least at 14:30. Makubela. Just wait, I just want to listen. Mashile. Yes, sir.
Sorry. I really want you to excuse me from the meeting. I must go to another meeting. And really, I'm very much sorry. I don't want to go out as if I am not respecting the ministers. Will you please excuse me?
I understand the situation on the ministers, the ad hoc committee on the Infopol is meeting, also sometimes on the ad hoc basis, so that's why the members are called. Yes, you are, Lisa, I understand, because this must be presented to the House as well. Excuse me? Yes, you member of the Senate committee. Anyone else?
Chair, I just want to say I'm going to the same meeting with him and I apologize to the ad hoc committee on protection of information bill and we must just go. We apologize.
I must tell because I leadership here from my ruling party. There's a top committee to pick up my members in my select committee. So those questions that from the machine? Yes.
Thank you, Chairperson. I would also like to thank the ministers for their marvelous responses. But nevertheless, I would be basically focus on two departments, on transport and roads and, on public works as well. But as you indicated, I wanted to be short. My worry in terms of the response from the presented DG, I think there are also challenges which were mentioned to us about the issue of, for example, the board. Let me read what about here so that I can pose a question. That the board of GAL was dissolved before the forensic report could be presented, leading to the provincial fraud and corruption team to investigate possible fraud. You see, what is worrying me is that I wanted to find out from the department whether there was any. I was very much impressed when the Minister of Justice was indicated that in this department there was this and this and this and this. In this department was this and this and this. Because in Rugal, there were serious challenges. To an extent, their relationship between the, what is it, Rugal and the staff in the board, between the board members, there was no good relationship at all. Therefore, my question is that if any case which is being filled up in that regard, and also, for example, there were challenges between the girl and Ral about the presence of the people who are there, who are renting at the airport. Because my worry is one, we ought to prevent the situation which will be similar like in the waterfront. For example, in the waterfront, you wouldn't check yourself how many blacks which are there, whereby sometimes it is alleged that some of the blacks were attacked, that they must get out. Well, there are a lot of people who are renting there. If you can take us on board, what is the status of the problem? I mean, because there is some serious problems of debt. And then with public works, I'm happy when the minister explained for us, because we had discussed there was no cooperation, proper cooperation, because the MC, it was very difficult to come to present to us, because of that issue of the relationship. But if it's improved, I think something will be done. I'll make an example. Remember when we visited Limpopo, before the Limpopo was put under Section 101B, with the program of taking parliamentary people, I'm giving an example. We were taking the Secretary of Home, there was a presentation where, by the way, told about that is the bridge, and this is 90% finished. And we told them, we wanted to go and visit the bridge. We found that there was nothing. The only bridge that I think it does have is the photos now. But when we went back, we were told that the bridge is now finished. Such things are happening in Limpopo. Thank you, Chairperson.
A very important point about GAL is the viability of the airport administration in Polokwane. It's running at a loss because APSA is not present. And the passengers, most of them, are going to Woodsbridge. Why? It's next to the Kruger National Park. That's a serious issue to address in the setup of GAL. It comes out in our report this week.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm not going to repeat the issue of GAL. DG, when you started, I'm just worried about when this thing happened of Limpopo, cash flow was identified over the time when they asked for overdraft and then requesting additional amount from yourself. But we are having a provincial treasury. Were they not reporting before the study which we should identify that no, this is a problem coming there and that in order to intervene? Point number one. Minister Khadebe, of all those cases, do we have enough and the capacitated investigators in order to finalize this? The way I see them and see the number, they're going to finish for a month after 10 years, if it is a big case, you say. To the hospital, the health, I'm afraid to see the start. The way you reported the thickness of the radioactive material, how they are regulated, and the manner in which all the materials, the equipment were taken from the hospital and stored there. I'm happy to hear that you are taking steps to rectify this. But do we have enough capacity in order to do this type of serious job? Thank you.
I think my issue here, Chair, I think one is to really ask for the relook on the interactions that we should have about this particular intervention in Limpopo. I'm sure as Chair was opening, stated the February issue and now it's November, and probably it looks like there is a need for a frequent interaction so that we actually move together where we have to actually convince ourselves on things that are happening on the ground so that we are able to exercise our mandate from the NCOP as well. And then the second issue there is about the turnaround strategies in the in the relevant departments. I think from the report of Minister Khadebe, there is quite a good number of people that have been fingered. But the same people, as I can guess at the moment, they are part of the turnaround strategy. And then I think there is a particular problem that's going to emerge very soon. Because I've heard, I think, from transport, they're saying they are pairing those people about, you've got a problem with about 60 people, but you are pairing them with the intervention team. But then the possibility is that you may be hearing people that have got question marks on their head. And so it's at the end of the day, they are going to undermine your turnaround strategy. The third issue, Chair, that I wanted to raise is outstanding payments on contracts that are subject for scrutiny. Probably, I think, in the media, I've read that there are people that are crying foul for payment, but the issue around it is about the contracts that cannot be verified, that have not been concluded correctly in accordance with supply chain rules. But then you've got those contracts in place, which then through them they've got to deliver services, but then we are not happy because they have not satisfied correctly. Now the question is, how long are we going to take to finalize them and correct the situation so that the specific services that they're supposed to render then get rendered to the people? I think that is, and also a subsequent question to that, of course, is the evaluation of the impact of the intervention on service delivery. Is there anybody that is worried about that? Just simply to check the impact on service delivery. Because, of course, the intervention is intended to actually improve service delivery. But at the time of the intervention, then there is a possibility of getting unintended consequences. Are we trying to evaluate that? I think, Chair, that is the four issues that I just wanted to raise. Thanks very much.
Honourable Zakir.
Honourable Chair, Honourable Ministers, thank you for the presentation. Thank you for the frankly way you spoke to us. The first time I was criticizing the ministers, I was thinking that the minister of finance was putting the problem frankly on the table, but the other ministers was making excuses. But I'd like to compliment you today for the way you did this information here to us. I'm really astonished that the minister did turn around this important issue. All I like to know is what is the total amount spent above the normal budget amount. What is the total amount spent there to get this going?
Thank you to the members. Welcome back, Honourable Fifi. Honourable Ministers, you may respond in the way the Minister of Finance will direct.
Let me take the easy one. Well, in terms of capacity, there's always a challenge, especially law enforcement agencies, in getting top investigators to focus on investigations. This is one issue that we are continuously discussing within the Justice Crime Prevention and Security Cluster, of making sure that when dedicated officials in the law enforcement are given an assignment, they should not be diverted to other issues. So it's something that cannot be resolved overnight, but I think that consciousness is beginning to be felt within law enforcement agencies about the necessity of assuring that from beginning to end they should work as a team, so that when the docket is prepared, it must be court ready. That is what we are always striving to endeavor in all matters, including the Section 101B in these provinces that are under administration. On the issue of the number of cases, my assessment is that the majority of the cases will be disciplinary conduct against affected officials in terms of the Public Service Act. But there are criminal charges that are going to be preferred.
Already we have one that is before Limpopo, the on-point engineering. So that's why I was saying that these various investigations that are taking place, be it from the hawks themselves, or the special investigating unit, or the forensic investigations that have been commissioned by National Treasury, that is a process now that we are of ensuring that they are separated from those that require the public service to do its job and those that require a criminal prosecutions. But I'm under advice that that is imminent. Thank you, Chair.
Chairperson, thank you very much. The point raised by the Honorable Machel is a relevant one, where you find that there are more than 60 people involved in the Department of Transport, and in order to ensure that the law takes its course, you also have senior officials involved. So we are very much aware of the fact, and we have been speaking to the law enforcement agency to ensure that we are able to deal with the culprits wherever they are placed, not only to go for very low-level officials. So that, indeed, is important. We also have the issue where there's a head of a department, and we need to deal with that particular matter so that other lower-placed officials or even employees do not feel that when exposed criminal activity, they will be at risk because people higher up than themselves are being protected. But there's a process in dealing with that to deal with it sensitively, but ensure that we do indeed go after the people who are involved in criminal activity. The second issue that I would like to comment on is with regard to the airport. The department also realizes and sees the functionality of the airport as very important. In that regard, we have discussed with the CEO of EXA for them to engage in that process to seek a remedy to those issues. Then in regard to the issues with regard to Carl and Ralph, I would ask our officials to give information in regard to that matter. Thank you.
So thank you, Honorable Minister. The other question in relation to the problem that we reported, mainly at RAL. Now, the new challenge there is that the board was dissolved. And then when an attempt was made to replace the board, it was found out that the board was not properly dissolved. We have since approached the office of the minister to provide a way forward in terms of how we resolve the issue of the board, being specifically that the board needs to be reinstated, but they are left with about three months on the job. The forensic report by Ernst & Young is being followed up. There are three cases we are told by the SIO that are ready to go for the criminal side of issues. So we there is not necessarily a clear linkage between the dissolution of the board and the report. But the report was therefore never kept under the table. It is being investigated by the SIO. The other issue was the renting of space at CAP. The problem with this issue is it's not necessarily the occupation of the space, but it was around the renter and the lease agreement. We have approached Public Works because the land belongs to Public Works to request of acting to ensure that we exercise our rights in terms of whether and will be guided by the legal opinion whether there is a reason enough for eviction, or we can come to an agreement with the tenant there who's operating a lounge for her to pay the appropriate rent. The argument was whether, I mean, as the proposal she put forward was that she would want to go to enter into a profit-sharing mechanism, and some of the profits were going to be realized in 2 years. That's what we found a little bit problematic, but we are being advised through the state attorney by a senior counsel on this matter, and what's outstanding is to get the power of attorney just so that we're able to therefore exercise our rights based on those two options that I have just mentioned. I think I have dealt with the question from Honorable Tabitha of the Public Services Committee.
I must say in this meeting, it's the first airport where I've seen a luxury lounge as a jacuzzi and a BMW in a lounge. I've never seen it before. So they must look at the sustainability to run that that facility. Any other responses? TG?
Thanks, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. Let me perhaps start by indicating that I didn't understand very clearly the Honorable Becker's question, but if it's about how much the intervention is going to cost over the budget. Yes, we can set up, but we would have known if departments had the problem because it's scattered across all departments. Health is paying for the people that it's sending there. Some of them have been employees of health, so they're covered in the salaries of health. The same applies to other departments. The salary for its part, and that probably answers the other question about strengthening financial management in province as a whole, and even the oversight by the Treasury. We, to the extent that we exhausted the people that we could sign, in other words, there were no more people that we could take from our establishment without undermining our own capacity. We have soft in capacity. First to play the role of strengthening the Treasury, but also to make some of the capacity available in the other departments to assist in the areas of financial management and stuff like that. And that's going to be done within the resources that we have. In fact, a significant part of the environment that Treasury has requested in the adjusted budget is about taking money from some areas where we've decided to cut because we've got this responsibility now in favor of prioritizing the capacitation of the intervention. We want to make sure that the Treasury provincial that is strengthened over time so that it can exercise the responsibilities that are assigned to it by Section 18 of the PFNA. And, of course, part of that includes what I had referred to about making sure that there is a properly qualified, capable HOD in the Treasury, however appointed within the rules, of course. The question Honorable Makubela asked about whether we don't, the extent of monitoring so that we see things in advance. Indeed, we do regularly receive monthly and published quarterly financials from provinces indicating where each department is relative to its budget, projecting them for the full year. And of course, once the financial year has ended, we also look at, how departments, each one of the provinces came out at. We were monitoring, as a matter of fact, even the matter of accruals. So
we have the budget forum, the budget council, which is a statutory forum to which these things get taken to. And also, unlike, we have a technical committee for finance, which meets even more regularly, which is chaired by senior official from the National Treasury. So these things get discussed, provinces get given feedback that says, look, if you look at this table, my province A, there is a danger that you're going to have a problem. And some of them then act on it quite decisively to fix the situation. Others act, but only partially, and there may be evidence sometimes that still others don't really quite act on this advice for whatever reason, and therefore things do degenerate. And in this case, it was probably a mixture of the second and the third kind of case. But I didn't want to sort of bore the committee and sound defensive to say, we saw this coming, we saw it, but we do see this thing coming. But as you can see, that even when the situation sometimes deteriorates quite far, it is hard to reach agreement that this situation warrants this kind of an action. So you better be sure in our position that before you take the most drastic measure, it can be defended, and people, everyone can see more or less that the situation has reached that point. And so we do monitor. The last point I would want to make, almost like a general point, I mean, money is a difficult thing in the sense that it is very rare that there can be consensus across the board amongst everyone, those who need it and those who are responsible for making sure that things don't go wrong with it, that people can say, look, there is enough of it now. Please don't give any more. When we say the finances of the province have stabilized, things are relatively okay in terms of what the province needs, the resources are there, we don't mean that every need in every corner has been met. All we mean is that within reason, subject to the resources available, we think that things are moving toward being okay. Being able to table an adjusted budget that of 1.6 billion in a province like Limpopo, now compare that to the adjusted budget of national government, right? You can see immediately the magnitudes. But the Limpopo one was big, and there is still openness not to allow everything that people had ever thought of in the world to be considered. There is still openness to say, let's run the year. There are still several months this year remaining. Let's see how people do after this adjusted budget, and to the extent that there may be one or another area, very critical to service delivery, very critical to making sure that the services, particularly those aimed at improving the situation for the less fortunate people who use public services, the situation can be improved. But we can never have kind of open-ended thing where we say, look, if you need something, come. If you need come, you need come. Then in that case, the discipline about scarcity and stuff never works. I mean, we hadn't planned for the boilers at the start of the year, but when we became aware of them, when we discussed them, we made arrangements to make sure that they were resourced for them. The same would apply to things like furniture. If we work with the department, look at the areas where slow spending is taking place, possibly reallocate resources. There can be furniture. That's the dynamism that's needed in a system like this to save the situation. So we do think that it is within our capacity, working with the province cooperatively, working with our counterpart in the national department, to make sure that indeed service delivery can now improve in line with what is beginning to emerge in terms of the state of health in that province. I mean, the health of the finances, not...
Thank you. Just a few comments. To say that when we started in Limpopo, it was about a budget pressures on the compensation of employees. Now, three provinces, if I were to divert, Limpopo, Gauteng, and Eastern Cape, increased their staffing by 45,000 in a short period. And Limpopo from 2010 had staff of 7,000. They just increased staff by 7,000, but they compromised the posts of doctors and nurses.
So this is where the real problem is. Yes. So, but what we've done, not only for Limpopo but for these other provinces, is to do a proper staffing norms to say that if you're in a theatre, you must have so many nurses, and these nurses must be at this level. A professional nurse, an enrolled nurse, or what you call a staff nurse, and so on. So we're doing that, and we'll finish this. That will be the base on which we say these are the numbers, including Limpopo. But to ensure that we reduce this problem of service delivery and appointment of doctors and nurses, we have since April to October appointed 453 professional and clinical personnel, the doctors that we need and nurses. But what is important to note is that we have to look at these other people, the 7,000 that were appointed. Who are they? What do they do? So that they can be best placed. I mean, if the majority are administrative staff, it's actually eating up the budget for the employment of doctors and nurses. And this is what we're trying to correct. So we've used, and this is a project that we started for the whole country, not just Limpopo, where we employed unemployed graduates with financial skills, human resource skills, and IT. And we are using them to help us sort out the problems in Limpopo, but we're also subjecting them to training in procurement, in contract management, and so on. So we'll be using them, but we're hoping to retain them as well. Long-term. It's a project that is supported by the European Union. So these are additional hands that we have in provinces. So I thought I should just respond to that. For the honorable member, for the capacity, for the x-rays, we actually have an inspector care facility, and we have the names, actually, of the inspector. The other project that I was talking about, of retrieving equipment that was taken for facilities, it's a wrong way of procurement, and even a wrong way of providing maintenance. You don't take away equipment from the hospital, and you don't even know what's wrong with it. So we need to reverse that. We've got legal opinion that contract was a problem anyway from the onset. So we need to fix that.
The payment of the invoices are in dispute for those that are subject to investigation. I think a few things have got to be first made here in this regard, is that when the intervention started, there was an outcry that people are not being paid. And the statistical information indicates that you had about 67% of invoices being paid in time by January. That has improved to more than 84% by the end of September this year. And at the end of the year last year, you had about 1.2 billion rand sitting in accruals, which indicates that there would be invoices there that would be sitting needed to be paid. That has been brought down to about 250 million rand by the end of October, and that is in the presentation that the DG talked to. Now, in the course of all of these things happening, particularly after the end of the financial year, we advertised that people that have got legitimate claims, and we have said this in December last year as well, that people that have got legitimate claims have got to come forth. Now, in the context where some of the contracts are questionable, you obviously have to be very careful that the person you are paying, you're not just paying a person because they presented an invoice, you're paying a person because the person has got a legitimate claim. And that is a plea that we continue to make, that should there be a situation where we dispute an invoice because we're saying that the documentation that we could find from the various departments does not give us a proper contact that there is a legitimate claim, then the service provider must provide proof that the service provider has got a legitimate claim. Bring the contract, bring the proof that you've delivered what you're expected to be delivered, and then the matter will be looked at. So, Chair, as we speak now, less than 2% of the embassies are outstanding for more than 60 days. Now, in the
that 2% were not picking our chest and saying that that's a big improvement. We want to be able to have paid everybody in time. But we need to have a legitimate claim that we can consider and then be able to do the right thing. We are enjoined by the law to ensure that we protect the resources of the state, and we will do just that.
Chair, on behalf of ourselves, let me make a few concluding remarks. You know, these sorts of interventions are made in terms of the Constitution. Section 101B is a part of the Constitution. And it's made by a legitimate authority, also in the Constitution, the Cabinet. And the Cabinet is the national executive. Any other executive authority in country is subject to the national executive, subject, of course, to whatever provisions the Constitution makes in this regard. Now, in the experience that we've had, I initially wrote a note, I said we've experienced passive resistance. It used to be a Kandian at one stage, all of us used to be. But there was a disagreement from a certain quarter not too far from me, which said, no, there's been active resistance. I think that the committee should be aware that active resistance doesn't help. It's firstly illegitimate, secondly it's illegal, and thirdly it's disruptive. So in other words, you can put an administrator, you can put 20 people, 30 people from a national department. If the 1,000 people that are there are going to say, I'm not going to listen to what you're going to do, they don't have to listen to us, they have to act in terms of the Constitution and ensure that they fulfill their responsibilities in terms of the Constitution. So the one element that the committee could consider including in its report is respect for the Constitution, respect for people in Limpopo, and respect for the fact that you are paid a salary from the taxes of South Africans and some borrowed money as well in order to deliver particular services. Now, what you've heard today from around the table is neglecting ordinary people and their requirements, particularly, for example, boilers not working in hospitals, so you can't get the right kind of laundry done, you can't actually ensure that sterilization takes place, which is hazardous, to say the least, within a particular health environment. Now, why do school children have to sit on bricks to write exams when there's money in the system to buy furniture? Now, don't look at us and say, why didn't you buy the furniture? There are people paid in Limpopo to buy the furniture. Why haven't they? You know, and who appeared before you to explain why they didn't do it? You see? And it's criminal. It's criminal because you are jeopardizing the future of that particular generation, a cohort of learners in that particular environment. But you take the health equipment story, and boilers is one example, X-ray equipment is another example, theater equipment more generally as an example. All of those are the costs that the public in Limpopo has to pay. And somebody from Limpopo has come and explained. Not just the numbers of 2 billion and 3 billion. Why is it that when that province was being run at that point in time, before the intervention, why were these services not being delivered? Why was school furniture not bought? And we can go on. Why were teachers appointed as hospital CEOs? Anybody who has an incredible understanding of the health system will know that you're going to require at least experienced managers, even if they don't know anything about health, in order to make sure that a complex animal like a hospital, it has many, many complex parts that need to work together in order for patients, that is the Limpopo public, to receive the right kind of service. Now, for example, in the surgery, have been very polite up to now, but one of the things that my colleagues amongst officials tried to do is to appoint a new HOD for the surgery. We don't want to go into the long history there, but it's important to know that after many, many months of trying, including having interviews, designating a particular individual, then designating a second individual, today, as we said, am I right, there's no HOD in the Treasury. Now, the question is, where's the resistance coming from? We've done everything correctly. We've even through the Director General, in their common compromise with a particular person they thought they liked. But today, as we said, we don't have it. Now, what role is the Provincial Director General playing in this regard? Both in terms of ensuring that the right kind of disciplinary action happens, and in terms of not facilitating these kinds of things, is a question that the committee must look into. You know, we all have lots of pressure and lots of work to do. But if you can't get this kind of resistance, it makes our work that much more difficult at the end of the day. The second last point I want to make, Chairperson, is about service delivery. It's a point that we were very intent upon and several of you have raised. The only point I want to make there is what was happening to service delivery before we got there as national government. Where was the school books? Where was the school furniture? Where were the bridges that were supposed to be built? I've seen reports where one bridge was supposed to be being brought from the UK, but in fact a bridge in the US landed up there. Wow, how did that happen? Okay, and a road that wasn't initially required was suddenly a road was built there. At tens of millions of runs. So be assured that both the officials from the national level and the ministers are very committed to ensuring that everything that we're doing on one hand is to secure a proper financial system, but on the other hand is also to ensure that the people of Limpopo get what they deserve in terms of services. Finally, the point you made, Chairperson, is attitudes, and that we should sit around the table. We tried that right from the beginning. The minute Cabinet took this decision, some of the colleagues have changed here, but we went to Limpopo. Right? And we sat around the table. And we tried our best to create a climate, including the meeting in January with the Premier and so on. I won't go through a blow-by-blow account. But if there is this kind of active resistance, then it's hard to sit around the table. But we will again endeavor to do the right thing, because ultimately, Limpopo is one province, but it's part of South Africa. And all of us are, as government, intent upon making South Africa work and ensure that people get the services they want from our government. And we'll see what we can do to create a more cooperative climate. Thank you very much to all of you for allowing us to be here today. And thank you to my colleagues for being very helpful, and the officials as well.
Also from my side, Honourable Minister and Ministers, and DG with your delegation, administrators, thank you for your inputs and presentations to give us that perspective. We're taking this issue on Limpopo to a short debate on Tuesday. And I agree there must be respect for the Constitution, and that is the point that as chairperson I will address when dealing or participating in that debate. There was a point made by the Premier, by the Director General of the province and some of the HODs about the diagnostic analysis that they haven't received those reports. Now, when we met in March, the diagnostic analysis was tabled in the meeting. Now, ask the question, what happened with it? So we've got those copies and we will forward it to the Director General, because that was the official report in terms of the analysis being done. The other one was the action plans to be tabled also in the FCOP. I think there's a couple of lessons that we can learn from this exercise. And now I'm coming to us. Learners sitting on bricks, a hospital that's lacking equipment, etc. A bridge not being built. The Member of Parliament, the Member of the Legislature, the Councillor must do that oversight in his or her deployment. Doesn't matter to which part you belong. We are all deployed. Because you must submit a constituency report. And that's the message we must carry out as Members of Parliament. What is our role? The oversight role of the provincial legislature, I think there was a bit of slackness, also captured in the AG's report last year, that SCOPA was 2 years behind in the work. Why? That's the issues we have to address. And then ourselves, our oversight in Parliament.
We are dealing, Honorable Minister and Ministers, on a quarterly basis now with the provincial treasuries, as mentioned by the Director General, to monitor the spending from our side in the provincial treasuries and the rest of the departments. So they will come to us the end of March for the second meeting that we will have with them, the 9 provincial treasuries. A follow-up meeting, definitely yes. The State of the Nation address is the 14th of February. It is what they call Valentine's Day, a lovely day. The next State of the Nation address is in the evening. So I want to put it, that you look at our diaries, maybe in the morning, as we did the 9th of February this year, when the sauna was also in the evening, if it's possible that we can reconvene. But then, call the Premier, because he's going to be here as Premier of his province, that we take this forward. Lastly, on the Minister, this intervention, the prosecution say we must review the intervention regularly. The word regularly is not defined. We did it now twice in 2012, it's not working. We're going to do it on a quarterly basis to get more pressure of performance in that province. In terms of our role, referring to our oversight and our recommendations and to follow up on our recommendations. So the finger at last also pointed us. Thank you again for your presence. Honorable Makubela.
Chair President, I asked just for a half a minute. I wanted just to put something to... it was a follow-up question to...
Honorable members must leave.
I understand, but this one, what are you, and I thought it would help.
Okay.
Minister Khader, you know, we're having witness protection field. We have enough budget for that. And also the facilities. When you start charging the people, you have a serious problem. Education is very good. This is very important when you mentioned on point engineers. Something happened after that case, one of the cases came that I don't want to mention. And the court was, I'm sure, all right, was destroyed. But do we have enough places anywhere? They must brief you so that we'll be able to see it and say, all right, do I have enough budget for this witness protection? Where are they going to be accommodated during the duration of the trial? Thank you.
Thank you. The Honourable Minister noted the question. We're going to reply in writing because I said we're going to adjourn at our bus.
Thank you, Honourable Minister. The Minister of Finance is hearing the cry from the NCOP.
The Honourable Makubela is a former commissioner in SACS. So that's the angle he takes when he asks questions. Thank you, Honourable Minister. This meeting is adjourned. Thank you.